Sean Rivers, health and fitness coach right now.
What inspired you to become a coach?
I think I would have to say it's always being of service to others, right? Oftentimes we look at, okay, I can give advice to everyone else, but I can't take advice for myself, right? Or I can't listen to my own advice. And so throughout my personal journey, I lost a lot of weight when I was in high school. Between my summer of junior year and senior year, I dropped about 30 pounds in between that summer, and that really spiked a huge, okay, I know how to do this. I can help other people do this as well. It wasn't just zero to 100 in terms of coaching. I've had a lot of ups and downs with it, but that's the main reason.
Yeah, can you tell me a little bit about your own journey?
Yeah. So I, throughout middle school, throughout high school, I was more the overweight kid, and that's an identity I just really brought upon myself, right? And so, as I had stated, between my junior and senior year is actually when I had dropped about 25, 30 pounds in between that summer. Now, for most of the people that are listening, that doesn't exactly sound like something sustainable. Now, I'll preface that I was 16. I didn't have to eat like crazy, just more in moderation. And then I was working out two times a day playing football. So I was very, very active, very low life stress, right? That's not exactly how our busy lives are framed right now. And so from there, I actually got into personal training. I did that for a couple of years in person. Really just the amount of hours that you're working on the floor and how in the middle of the day you can have big, huge gaps. And I was just really overworking myself. From there, that's when I got into more bartending and waiting tables. Really loved the hustle and grind of that. But the thing is, I just don't have a desire to be out until 2 o'clock in the morning right now. And so from there, I went back into health and fitness, launched my online business that I have about 6 months ago. And that's really the full circle of where it started and where it's at now.
Yeah. How does fitness and physical activity help your mental health?
There's many people that talk about how the gym is therapy, right? And I think that you need just multiple modalities. The more physically active you are, the better quality and quantity of food you're going to be able to eat, the more energy you're going to have in turn. And so when you're feeling really lethargic, you need a couple cups of coffee to get through the day, you eat a meal and you don't feel great after, all of those things go into, one, your productivity, and then everything you told yourself you were going to do, that's part of your productivity. And the more that lethargic and things like that you are, the less confident you are to go and actually do those tasks. And so when you actually keep that trust and keep those promises to yourself, which I think is just a direct correlation of me getting to the gym, regardless of how I feel, I go regardless if I made that promise to myself. And so the more of those small wins that you can start to stack up throughout the day, throughout the week, throughout the month, throughout the year, the more confident and the more productive you're going to become, and the more fulfilling life gets. So in terms of physical activity to my mental health, I feel they're directly correlated.
And when I was doing my research and looking at your sheet you sent to me, you talk a lot about your fight with alcohol addiction. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so what had happened was when I was 18, I was actually wrongly accused of a DUI. And what had happened was I just had a little bit of marijuana in the car. I took a sobriety test. I was fine walking in a straight line, all these kinds of things. But then when it came to balancing on one foot, first foot got 60 seconds. Second foot, I got about 30 seconds. And then they cuffed me and that was it. So as a young 18-year-old kid, you're not really sure what's going on. And it was just this long, drawn-out process for 2 years with different repercussions, and so that it became difficult for me to go and trust different parts of authority, trust myself, all of these different aspects. And that's more of when I got into drinking and alcohol. And so I was really using that as an escape. And at the same time, I loved the attention that it brought me, right? The life of the party, being able to go, you know, you build, again, I talk about this word identity, which is a lot of how we view ourselves. And when I looked at myself, life of the party, everyone likes me, I'm always able to have a good time. And then in turn, that's how other people started to think of me. Okay, this is the guy where if we're going to have a good time, let's bring him on board, right? And so, but it slowly just made it so that each day, that's what I was looking forward to. That's what was getting me through my day. And there wasn't just this one big, huge epiphany moment that I was like, oh, I'm done with alcohol forever. I drink more in moderation here and there once a month now, where it's something where I didn't use it as an escape from my own emotions or even just from my own life. And so now it's not necessarily something that I can go and, hey, you're drinking every single day, you're an alcoholic or whatever, right? And whatever I use lightly here. But when you have an addiction to something, I'm not going and saying, hey, I can just help you end all of your addictions. But no, especially through like physical fitness and your nutrition and your lifestyle, some of those addictions, there's a direct correlation of when you start to implement, okay, I'm fueling my body better and all of these types of different things, you're building a new, healthier identity for yourself. And when you can do that, you learn how to navigate some of those addictions better. And that was that slow process that started for me.
Also, you talk a lot about self-sabotage. Can you get Yep. into that a little bit?
Yeah. So especially when we're trying to eat healthy and do all the right things, right? Oftentimes we self-sabotage ourselves. Self-sabotaging yourself is, from my own personal definition, when you say that you're going to do one thing, you do the opposite, and then you get mad at yourself, and you have all of this shame and guilt because you didn't do the thing that you were going to do, right? I'm going to eat healthy this week. And then all of a sudden, you go to McDonald's, you get XYZ, and then you're beating yourself up about it. That's yeah. just you self-sabotaging this pattern. And so to help aid with that, really what happens is we make very, very big, lofty goals, whether it be for the week, the month, the year, and we make them so big that we think that we're going to be able to go from 0 to 100, completely flip our life around 180, and then we're just going to become this new person. And for some people, sure, they can do that, right? But for others, what happens is they say, you know what, from now on, I'm never going to eat McDonald's again. I'm never going to eat bread again or insert food group. And then they're not able to stick to it. And then they beat themselves up about it. And they have, just like I said, shame and guilt. And when you express the emotions of shame and guilt, it often leads to triggering the pattern to continue to happen. And so you're just beating yourself up, beating yourself up, beating yourself up. Now, I found that when you're wanting to sabotage yourself much less, whether it comes to health and fitness, nutrition, lifestyle, or even any other endeavor, it's much more important and sustainable to go and make a very, very small goal. So if you're sleeping 4 hours every single night, sure, optimally, we would sleep 8 to 9 hours. But if you're at 4 hours right now, going and saying, hey, I'm going to sleep 8 hours, you're doubling what you're already doing. It would be much more sustainable to say, you know what? 4 nights next week, I'm going to go and I'm going to sleep 4.5 hours. And then when you can consistently do that, you are more prideful because you had actually kept that small promise. And then the week after that, okay, you know what? I'm going to do 5 nights, 4.5 hours. Or you can say, oh, you know what? I'm going to sleep 5 hours one night. And then the next, just pick something that you can stick to. When you can celebrate those wins much more, then you bring yourself into an energy of, oh, I can do this. And then as you're consistent with it, you build that habit, you build a new identity, and then all of a sudden in six months, even if it's just sleep, but you sleep 8 hours, your life could change dramatically, just in terms of your hunger levels or even how energized you are throughout the day. And so instead of going and trying to make all of these big, huge, lofty goals, which are amazing, but we try to make it so that we change everything all at once. Just change things that you know you'll be able to stick to, keep them very small, celebrate those wins, and build upon that.
Yeah, that's... I need to have a healthier relationship with food too. So
I got you. It's everyone. I mean, why do you say that?
Because try to eat either fast food and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Even though I'm trying to work out and lose weight.
So I would urge you to just look at what you're doing now, right? So meet yourself where you're at, and then look at where you want to go as well, right? If you said, hey, I want to have six-pack abs in the next 3 months, it may be something where you need to look at a better expectation of what you can do.
Yeah.
Is it possible? Sure. Is it sustainable? Most likely not, right? So I'll give you some advice here just in terms of even eating out fast food. There's two poles of people right now. The people that say only focus on the quality of food, right? You have to eat organic this and free range this. And then there's, okay, no, you can eat whatever you want, just change the quantity. And really, they're intertwined, right? So even if someone has a really busy schedule and they're going out to eat every single night, right? It could be fast food, it could be to a restaurant. That's when you're starting to control a lot of the quantity of food, right? And so, okay, instead of getting a number 6 and it has fries and a burger and a drink, right? All right, you know what? What's the best doable option that I can have right now? So I'm going to go and get just the chicken sandwich, right? And then have just zooming out a little bit. So look at the rest of your day as well. If that chicken sandwich is 30 grams of protein and 500 calories. Okay, it wasn't necessarily bad. That's just part of what you had today. And then let's say that you could start losing weight by eating 3,000 calories, just to make up an arbitrary number. All right, well, you still have 2,500 calories to play with for the rest of the day, right? So some meals, I'm going to focus on more of the quality of the food. And then other meals, I'm going to focus on the quantity. And when I can find a healthy relationship for the both of them, that's something that's going to work for me, then you will start to see progress. As you see progress, you build momentum. As you build momentum, you're much more driven to keep going. So if you're eating fast food every single day and it's not out of, I'll say, necessity, it's right. more just convenience or just because it tastes good, right? Because it does. Then you can go, all right, you know, I'm eating fast food 7 days a week. Next week, I'm just going to eat 6 days, and that's it. I'm just going to have one meal cooked from home, right? You can look into different meal prep services. You can look up recipes online. I'm unaware of your schedule and everything like that, but these are just ways that I can go and chat with you briefly and say, these are some of the things that my clients already do, right? You can view yourself, and you can say, ooh, okay, this makes sense, this doesn't, this makes sense, this doesn't. What is the easiest barrier to entry to me going and implementing today? And then through those small changes, you have that long-term approach. In 6 months, you could look unrecognizable by just starting to go and implement one or two habits this week, one or two into the next week, not getting overwhelmed and making sure you can stick to it.
You've done over 100 plus podcasts, which is incredible. How does it feel to get your message out to a larger audience?
So I think what happens is, for me right now, it doesn't even feel like I am speaking to everyone. It just feels that I'm speaking to you right now. And that's it, right? And so oftentimes we get caught up in, oh, I want all these views and I want this and I want that. But someone that has a million views on something, sure, it may have been, you know, someone could have just scrolled by it, you know, and you might not have impacted anyone at all. But if we're able to just go and sit here and I'm able to go and ask you different questions and we go back and forth a little bit, that's much more meaningful to me to know that this was helpful for you, hopefully. Or if, you know, you can think about, oh my God, it's a huge stadium of people that I might be speaking to now. It's really my overwhelming just like thought process to this is that I hope this helps find someone when they need it. That's it. You know, and I may never know if it helps someone. I may never. There's plenty of people that I'm sure have listened to advice or whatever you want to call this from me, and I'll never know them. And that's cool too, you know. So to do over 100 podcasts, I think it's – I love talking, connecting with people. And my main thing, it's less about like how much this content gets spread and all these different things. It's, okay, I was able to sit here. One of the most important things that I have is my time and attention, as do you, right? And so I'm giving you my time. You're giving me your time. We both have our attention on each other. And it's really fun to be present like that and do cool stuff.
Have you seen the confidence level rise in your clients as they go through the process?
That's a huge component, right? I'd love to go and market myself of just all of the internal and the perspective shifts and all these things. Like, hey, come here and you'll feel happier. Like, well, no, that's not what's happening, right? You know, come to me and you'll build all of your confidence. But again, like, that's not just, it's a byproduct. And so I find that with many clients, again, many of us have not really been praised, or we have a difficult time even receiving it. If I was like, Michael, oh man, your glasses, those are fresh, right? Those are the style, amazing, fits your head, all these different things. Many of us will go and be like, oh yeah, okay, like, thanks. And not really fully receive it, right? And so there's, when you look at confidence and all of these different layers to it, the more that you can build up, and again, I'd love to say the same things over and over and over, because even if I articulate my words in just a different order, hopefully it will click for someone that's listening. And so as you continue to keep those promises to yourself and you do things over and over and over, then that confidence, you're giving yourself evidence to be more confident because you follow through with what you're going to do. Think about a time in your life where you could take 2 weeks, right? For 1 week, you can do an exercise. I don't know. Would I really recommend doing it for an entire week? Maybe, maybe not, you know? But take what resonates and discard what doesn't for me. So you could go and you could make all these promises to yourself and then not keep any of them. And then for a week, do the opposite. Say that you're going to do something and then do it. And tell me your confidence level from each of those weeks. Even just do it for a day and tell me. So as you continue to make all of these changes, it's inevitable that you become more confident. And it's really fun to see in other people.
What do you do to help your own mental health?
That's a great question. I love that. So for me, I think one of the most important things that I can do is to not have so many inputs, okay? So constantly, you know, I'm on the computer. Am I taking in social media? Am I listening to a podcast? Am I doing research for this? And, you know, we never give ourselves a time to rest for a second intentionally. We don't. We're always plugged in. When it's in the car, you're listening to music. When you're out on a walk, you're listening to a podcast. Whatever it may be, you're talking on the phone. But finding a little bit more stillness in things, I think, is really a big key to your own mental health. Because you can check in with yourself and really see how your emotions are feeling, not just in your mind, but your heart, your body, all of these intricate facets that are emotions and our mental health, the way that they're intertwined. And so for me, I love just getting outside, putting my feet in the grass, and not having my phone on me, right? Even just a little bit of light journaling. It doesn't have to be something where it's this, oh my God, I'm going to journal about exactly what happened when I was 6 years old and it was June 20th. And, you know, we have all of these larger traumas, and everyone has them, okay? Because pain is just subjective. But even just doing a little bit of light journaling, even if it's just for a minute or two, where I just jot a couple of thoughts down, when you are not writing things actively out and you keep everything stuck in your head, what can happen is it's like you're reading a book with it pressed all the way up. And then all that journaling and some writing can do is you put it down on a piece of paper and all of a sudden you push that book from your head and you can actually read it. And you're like, this is what was going on? This is what I was so stressed about? Oh, that's not that important right now. So those are two of the biggest things that I like to do for my own mental health.
So where do you want to see your mission of helping people in the next 3 to 5 years?
I love thinking about the vision. I love thinking about how many people I'm going to be able to serve and help and all these different aspects of it, right? I have big goals and I have lofty goals, but I don't put a timeline on it. For me personally, I found that when I put a timeline on it, I'm actually less productive with it because I say, you know what, this is what I want in 5 years. And then I look at myself today and I'm like, I'll just have it in 5 years. I don't got to worry about it today, you know? And that's what we're, so it doesn't work for me, right? But it works for many of people that have big 5, 10, 20 year missions and visions. Really the overwhelming service that I'm trying to do for people and the way that I want to impact them is to feel better about themselves and have a higher standard for themselves. That's part of my mission statement, is to feel really good about yourself. Because if you feel good about yourself and you feel inspired and you feel fulfilled, your life opportunities, you start to see more instead of seeing all these negative aspects to life. And then having a higher standard of living for people is to make sure, yes, of course, I think the physical side is important. The having a body that you're comfortable in and that you've worked hard for and that you know feels good. And then that in turn is a byproduct. I'm not saying that everyone has to have a six-pack abs. I don't, right? And upon this higher standard of living, the better that you can make your body feel, the better you will feel, the better decisions you'll be able to make. And so as a society and as a collective, we'll be able to grow and hopefully just be kinder to each other, even in that aspect. So that's my mission. I don't know when it's going to happen, but every single day, the conversations that I have with people, I hope to instill that in them.
I like in your description sheet, you talk about having tattoos.
Yep.
What do they mean to you?
Yeah, they actually don't mean a ton. I'm when it comes to tattoos, I love the art component to tattoos, right? And I think it's, again, like I put that in like your like a bio or a one sheet or something like that, just because it's fun. And a lot of other people are interested in tattoos as well, right? It's a great talking point. It's a great way to connect with people. And the more connection we build, the more community we build, and the better we can help support each other. Right. And so my tattoos, I've gotten them from all over. Right. I got my first tattoo at 18. It just says family on it. And then I started getting into more fun designs like a skull and some roses. I got a tattoo on vacation one day. It's of Medusa. I've got Marilyn Monroe on my arm. I've gotten tattoos just because I thought that the artist was cute. I've got so many different tattoos and, you know, it's just a part of like what I like and enjoy, right? Do I know exactly why? Nope. But do I like it? Yep. So I'm going to keep doing it.
How can people reach out to you and learn more?
Yeah, for sure. So, on all platforms, you can find me at Growth by Sean, and Sean is S-H-A-W-N. That's at Growth by Sean. And I also host my own podcast, the Growth by Sean podcast. It's an interview style, but I also throw in a lot of helpful tips and tricks, or even just mindset shifts and perspectives of health and fitness and your own nutrition and lifestyle journey. So if you type in at Growth by Sean somewhere, I can promise you, you'll find me. And if you DM me or you fill out an application, I'm happy to talk, give you some advice or walk you through things, help support you. And if you need a more individualized approach, just reach out to me and we'll see if we're a good fit to work with each other.